Well, welcome along to the Pastor's Hut. Dominic Steele is my name. It's great that you could join us this afternoon. And this week we're actually doing two editions of the Pastor's Hut. The whole issue of religious freedom has been such a huge one in Australia this last week, with the issue really on the front page many days over this last week. Tomorrow we're actually going to be joined for a special edition of the Pastor's Hut by Michael Callahan, and he's the Executive Director of Freedom for Faith, and so we'll be putting a series of questions to him about this whole subject of religious freedom. Today, though, we're talking the whole process of welcoming people to your church, and I'm really pleased that we've been able to have with us Andy Hobbs from Salt Church in Wollongong. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Good
and David Allen from Hunter Bible Church up in Newcastle. And yep. It's great to have you with us, David. Now, you guys have thought, both of you, a lot about these questions. We're going to talk in a moment about the whole issue of welcoming, but the pastor's heart, and what's a journey that God has taken you on, where you've grown as a pastor, as a man, in your relationship with him, something like that. Andy, yeah, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think for us as a church, this year has been a little bit of a difficult season, so I found myself in the role of acting lead pastor.
Yeah, and in an unexpected way.
Yeah. And so that's been getting my head around that, around the new role and learning to do things I hadn't done before, leading a staff team and managing a budget with the admin committee and some of those kind of things. So some challenges there, lots of joys as well. But yeah, I think seeing God's goodness in that, seeing God provides the things that we need when we need them, and growing my trust of Him. So
Dave, what about you?
I was reflecting on this. I think my role, obviously, in terms of helping people join church, or at least that's part of my role, is, I mean, I love my church. Really keen for people to join church, and so that having lots of conversations with people about, in a sense, saying to them, come and join. But I don't feel like I'm a very persuasive person, and so having those conversations with people and seeing people not join us and then going, oh, what have I done wrong? How could I have done that better? You know, and they're helpful questions to reflect on after you've had conversations with people. But I think one of the things I've seen over the years as I've done this and done this and done this is going, part of my motive in that is going, wanting to please people. If I can just say the right words that will make people happy with me, then they'll join my church. And taking a step back and going, hold on, I confess that I trust that God is sovereign. I know God will do what He wants to do. He'll call His people. And so going, wanting to please Him and serve His agenda, I mean, I believe those things, I just wasn't expressing those things in my heart, I guess would be the right way to put it. And so having to take a step back and going, no, I need to be honest with people and act with integrity and, yes, be kind and compassionate and all that, but in the end, it's people will make their decisions about whether to join or not. And that's in God's hands. It's not in mine. I think that was a... I'm still learning that lesson, but it's a key lesson that I've been learning.
Let's start on the process of welcoming. And when are the peak times in the year where churches are likely to get most newcomers? Dave, what are we doing?
January. January, we'll get... anywhere up to 40% of our year's visitors will come January, February, those 2 months. It's like biggest. We've got a uni congregation that's skewed.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say, have you done a breakdown, if you like, between cutting out the uni congregation? Would that still be true?
It's definitely
true in the uni congregation.
Uni congregation's March.
Right.
And that's like half our intake for uni is in that time. But for our other congregations, January, February, it's 40% roughly coming that month or months. Yeah.
Yeah. Andy, what about you?
Similar. Yeah, I think January, February for us in Wollongong is probably similar to Newcastle. Transient kind of city, so a lot of people moving in, and that's the particularly Christians moving into the area early in the year, looking for a church, but also people who aren't Christian. But the second one would be probably September, October.
Really? Right.
So those two. Probably.
And where are you putting kind of Easter and Christmas in that mix? Would you say January, October, Easter, Christmas, or how would you think of it there?
Well, we get lots of visitors in Christmas and Easter, mm-hmm. But...
Are they wanting to stay?
Yeah. Some might come, but they generally won't hand a card in, so mm-hmm. we can't follow them up, and so I'll notice them, but that'll be it. Can't do anything mm-hmm. with that other than say g'day to them, try and make the mm-hmm. most of the conversation on the day. But we are starting to see people who come to Christmas, and then they'll come to... We run a kids' mission in January.
Yeah.
And they'll come to that.
Mm. And you've got a big carols.
We have massive carols just before Christmas.
Yeah. Mm.
And so people will come to those events, and then they'll start to come and check out church.
But there's a really big push of not to go to sleep in January, not to be kind of put the B team on, if you like.
Yeah, we've actually just changed our preaching roster, so our best... preachers are on in January. Mm. We want to have our A team on because mm-hmm. we just have so many visitors. We want to actually give them a...
And even though it's harder to do the warm suppers and the good morning teas and stuff like that, that kind of follows through across the board, really. It's harder to do it because lots of people... You've got more guests but less regulars at that time. Yeah. Mm. Now, what about someone, Andy, who just comes to church? What's the process that happens when... I'm not so much talking about them getting to the front door. I mean, but from once they've arrived.
So we recently, last year, rethought through our follow-up process because mm-hmm. People matter, and so we want to make sure people are followed up well, and so that we give every opportunity for people to join our church and keep coming back and hearing about Jesus. And so we just rethought last year the process, and the three factors we were thinking through is that we want the follow-up process to be relevant, we want it to be timely, and we want it to be achievable. And I think that's an important thing for someone to think through. What does it look like to be relevant, and the follow-up to be relevant in such a way that it works for the people that you're trying to reach? Mm-hmm. Like a SMS and emails might work for some people, but others, they might feel that's really cold and impersonal. They'd rather a phone call, or younger people don't answer their phone. They never use their phone for actually phoning people. Mm-hmm. They just block the calls, and so... Maybe you've got to work out, there's other things, Facebook messengers or whatever it is, or home visits. Some people, so you've got to work out who it is. For us, it's SMS and email. So we do, when someone visits the first time, we'll send an SMS on the Monday, and then an email on the Tuesday or Wednesday, and then another SMS on Saturday, really trying to get the first timer to come back a second time.
So you'll reach out three times in that first week.
Yeah, we have connection cards on a Sunday. We try and get everyone to fill it out on a Sunday, including all the members, to try and maximise the opportunities that visitors are going to actually mm-hmm. fill it out. If they look around, everyone's filling them out together. If they give us a mobile number and an email, we'll do mm-hmm. both.
Would you ever invest? An email and SMS, they're not actually that expensive in terms of time.
Yeah.
More expensive is visiting. Do you know?
Yeah.
Would you do a visit on the one-off person?
I wouldn't. I think the people that come to our church would freak out at that. The church I was at previously, that was a normal thing. Particularly with older people, they really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. And that was so. I think it's really, you've got to work out what's going to be relevant for the people in your church and the people in your area, and so you have a chat with people and kind of gauge that. But yeah, part of the reason we've done this is, I said, achievable. We had a system where previously the lead pastor would send an email, and that was just, he was becoming the bottleneck mm-hmm. for that happening, and so that wasn't achievable. So we're trying to instead do it in such a way that it's pretty easy up front, and because we have a fairly high level of first-timers visit, mm-hmm. and then it tapers off in some ways as people come back a second time.
We'll get to second time in a minute. Let's go. We'll stay on first time with you, Dave. What happens? Somebody walks into Hunter Bible Church and you've somehow got their details.
We'll send them a letter, snail mail.
Really?
It's try and be a bit more personal, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Is it a form letter, or is it sort of? I guess it's pretty form.
It's pretty form, but we'll try
to customise it.
Yeah, yeah, depending on what they've put on their card, if we can.
Handwritten?
No, type it, but obviously, like I say, if there's anything to put on their card, I'll adjust the letter.
And it's you usually who sends that letter?
Yeah. So I'll send the letter. Wanted to go out by the latest Wednesday, so they get it before the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
it's pointless.
And then everyone will get a phone call if they've given us their mobile.
In the first week?
Yep. That's the
goal.
The goal.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone gets a phone call.
Yep.
Right.
If they've given us their phone details, then I'll go, then they're happy to be called.
Okay. So we've got, at this stage, two different models going on, because really the model you've got, Andy, is really just your... Is it membership pastor? Is that what you call that person? That person who's sending the texts and sending the...
No, ours is all volunteers.
Volunteers do that? So, okay. Well, so have you just got... You've got one person who's responsible for that sending, or how do you work it out?
We've got... there's a couple of people that sort through the connection cards on Monday, and then through Alvanto, which we use to church management stuff, you can assign that to someone, and there's generally one of the people that do the connection cards will then... trigger the SMSs to go out through Alvanto.
Right. What about you, Dave? How does the system work with the team that's doing the visiting? Oh, no, the phone call, sorry.
Well, they'll do a phone call, and the idea with the phone call is to try and meet up with the person for coffee or over for a meal or whatever it might be, try and build a bit of a relationship with them with the goal of finding out where they're at, what will be helpful for them.
And you're shooting for a phone call for every visitor? Everyone hands a card in.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Here's the thing. To get a card in, do they have to chase you or do you chase them? Do you know?
To fill a card in?
Yeah. In our situation, because we have a kind of check-in thing where people check in at the front door, I'm astonished at the number of emails and phone numbers that people willingly give us. I think we were expecting people to be much more reticent to give us their details than they are. And so we basically know everyone's name who visits, you know, which I think that check-in system has been quite revolutionary. But it then also means people do visit but don't intend to come back, whereas you're getting, I suspect, richer contacts, if you like. Yeah,
so we used to do, like, everyone filled a card in, and we stopped doing that. We can talk about it if you like, we would invite people to fill a card in. And I actually have a team on a Sunday whose job it is to meet new people, try and get to know them, and part of that conversation is invite them to find out more about us with a view to inviting them to fill out a card. And when we moved from getting everyone to fill a card in to being personal invites, we obviously got much less cards. Like, we dropped significantly the number of cards we got, but the number of people who then came back didn't change.
Right.
And it's now started to go up. So we didn't lose... The total number of people who then started moving into church didn't change at all. Just the number of cards changed.
Right.
But I've always gone, if they give us their details, they're obviously obviously willing to be contacted. I have phoned a lady and she was completely surprised. She said, I've gone to heaps of churches and filled her card in and no one's ever contacted me. And I went, oh, I mean, but she didn't blame me.
Yeah.
She blamed them.
Well, we're the friendly church.
I mean, you gave me your phone number, I was going to ring you. But I don't do... I have teams now who'll do the phoning and building relationships because it's just too many people coming.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
And, I mean, I guess you've got a team in each... You've got four congregations, is that right?
Yeah.
And so you've got a team in each of those congregations?
Yeah.
Or... Now, okay, so we're 7 days in.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then, Andy?
So we've sent two SMSs and an email. The goal of that is really just to get the first time back a second time. They come back a second time.
What kind of strike rate do you get coming back the second time 1 week later? I'm presuming it goes up. by the fact that you've contacted them midweek as if you had, compared to if you hadn't contacted them midweek.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess how closely it is to that first week, but I think it's roughly about 50% of first timers for us come back a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And then a higher proportion of the second time is the third time. But yeah, I don't know how, I haven't tracked how closely that visits are. But,
Yeah.
So we have second timers. Someone comes a second time, visits a second time, we'll send another SMS on Monday saying, great to see you again. We'll send an email again, inviting them to a relevant event. So if they're, if we think they're a Christian, we'll invite them to our members course.
So how do you kind of make, you're making an early judgment on a different direction to go on, whether or not you think they're Christian or they're not Christian. Who makes that call, and how do, where do you do that thinking, and where do you start to send them down different tracks?
Well, I think it's safer to presume they're not Christian. We've got a team of people who are there on a Sunday, and we call them the host team, and they're doing the setup, they do the food. We've got some baristas doing coffee, and a couple of people greeting at the door, and those people debrief after church and try and list all the visitors, do a quick gauge on whether they think they were a missional contact or someone who's a Christian. And often they don't get around to everyone, but we try to then do that way, use that to triage a little bit.
Right, so the host team who are doing the food are also thinking, particularly the people.
Yeah, they're doing the food because of the people. Yeah, and that's been some people just want to do food, and you've got to keep saying, no, you're doing food because of the people. So I'd rather you're about to bring out a plate of food, I'd rather you go and talk to that person by himself and leave the plate in the kitchen. Like, the main thing is talking to people. So that's a bit of a shift for some people. But yeah, it's the host team is, they're hosting church. They're, like you would at a party, you care about the guests more than you do about the thing you're doing, but the thing you're doing helps the guests have a more relaxed time and feel comfortable and help the space feel familiar. So host team, we try and emphasise. We've got a smaller church than these guys. We're able to do some of these things a bit differently, but home-cooked food if we can, and try and make it feel a little bit more homely and that kind of style.
Yeah. Dave, what's your action there?
It's that follow-up team.
Are the food people, the host people, the same as the follow-up people, or it's different teams?
We have our small groups, our hosts, and we keep having, again, it's the same thing. Keep saying to them, you're hosts. You're not doing food. People are happy to do food because it's
I know what I'm doing. There's clear, measurable
key
performance indicators.
Yeah. Well, it's a job.
Yeah.
Whereas you say, no, you have a role. Your role is to be a host. And so that idea of, if you have people into your home, what would you do if you had people into your home? Well, we wouldn't just give them food or give them a drink, although that explains why you do those things. You'd go, oh, there's toilets there, or there's, oh, you've got kids. How about we look after your kids? You know, that sort of...
If you see something needs fixing, you do it.
It's
or
being
you move
thoughtful. And so helping our small groups see that, that's their role on a Sunday, is we want to make this a place where people are welcome.
And that's interesting. You've actually gone for your community groups, your Bible study groups, to be that role rather than... Do you do that, or do you have people on
we've got a team.
Specific teams.
Yeah. We've got three teams that rotate.
Yeah, that's how we're doing it. Three teams unrelated to the small groups. So we've got 1 week in, Dave. You've got a pretty good idea. I mean, what kind of strike rate do you get of when you've reached out for people with the phone call, reached out for people with the email, or the letter?
Email if we don't get their postal address. This year, over 1 in 2 have flowed into our membership course. 1 in 2
first timers.
Yeah. If they've handed a card in, 1 in 2 have flowed into our membership course. 1 in 3 are now in a small group.
Have you got a sense of the number of people who visit, how many you get the card, What percentage would that be?
We've just started very first stages of trying to work that out. So at the moment, I have my team on a Sunday. I just started to keep track of who came versus who handed a card in. And look, people will come to church and they won't want to hand a card in, or they won't want to hand a card in the first week they're there. They'll come back and they'll hand the card in third week there, fourth week. Mm-hmm. That's all right. People make all those sort of decisions. I want my team to be aware of who's there, who's new,
mm-hmm.
and to have the conversation with them so that they don't fall through the cracks, so they're not ignored or forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that conversation is inviting them to, asking them if they'd like to find out more about church, mm-hmm. if they'd like to get connected into church.
Yeah.
And again, people will make that decision for themselves about whether they do or not, but we want to do our part of saying, do you want to, can we help you do that?
Let me just wind back a little bit to the initial welcome. And Julia Hobbs has put in a question. She said, a book I read on welcoming said that visitors decide whether to return in the first few minutes of walking in the door, even before they hear the sermon. How important is the initial welcome? Another suggestion was to put the person with the biggest smile at the door. Mm. What do you think?
first impressions. But I get the strength of that. I actually think people make their decision about, in terms of church, the warmth of church, in what happens in the 10 minutes after church finishes. They'll come in and they'll get that sense of, have these people thought about things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I welcome here? But if they get, and they'll, you know, I can think of, you know, I've been to a church where I listened to the sermon, was brilliant, the music was wonderful, and the first impressions were really good. We get to the end of church, you know, and no one spoke to my wife.
Mm.
And the kids ran away from my kids, so my kids couldn't play with them. And I get in the car, and they're going, we never want to go back.
Mm. Well, so I had a moment at our church a couple of weeks ago, and I preached a talk, and I thought it was a good one. And I was standing right at the back of the room. I was just looking at a couple who were sitting in the back row who were new.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want to be the person who goes to have the conversation with them, because it's just better if somebody else does.
Who's not paid to have the conversation.
Who's not paid to have the conversation. And I was kind of counting the seconds until that conversation started. And, I mean, it happened, and it happened in less than a minute, but it didn't happen in as many seconds.
That kills me. Does like I think like that minute, even 30 seconds, is a huge amount of time for a visitor to be standing there.
They feel very conspicuous, and if no one engages with them, they just go, this church does not want me here. That's what they walk away with thinking. Now, it doesn't mean they won't come back, but you just made it really hard for yourself to get them to come back.
So I think you've got sadly you've got multiple opportunities where you can lose someone. It's the first impression, it's the last 10 minutes, it's the gathering itself. It's there's a book that's really helpful, Greg Atkinson, American guy, Secrets of a Secret Church Shopper. He was a ex-pastor, and he's still paid by churches, and he'd go around and he'd be a secret shopper at the church and then give him a valuation at the end. And he's written a book that's pretty helpful about the big trap falls, that big things that churches stuff up. And one of them, smell, surprisingly. And so smell, he's saying, is a big indicator. People don't remember it, but it forms a long-term memory of how a place smells, particularly if you've got an older building, it smells a bit mouldy or something. People can't put their finger on it, but it just feels old. So we've got a barista. We've got a coffee machine at the front door. We try and make coffees, but no one, just to get the smell out. And that's, you know, those kind of those little things, I feel like, make a little bit of a difference. But yeah, I think it's ultimately... It's
toilets.
People. Toilets, yeah, clean...
If they smell clean, people go. Right.
Yeah. This place is looked after. People care about it. And
I can trust my kids here. They're not going to pick up some contagious disease.
Yeah, the kids' space, even if it looks safe and if the leaders look like they know what they're doing. And it's hard because there's so many things, but I think that's important. Can I ask about welcoming?
Yeah.
Because you guys, you have a thing of, you don't have a welcome team. You've got all of church kind of welcoming. Right? How does that?
I guess I make a distinction in my mind between, I see the congregation is the welcome team,
yeah,
because it's the responsibility of every Christian to love people. and to love the stranger. So the congregation should welcome people. And I don't think it's too much to ask them to, I talk to them about, you know, to introduce yourself and to introduce some other people, someone you don't know, invite them for a meal. That's not a big ask. Mm, yeah. Any congregational member can do that. You don't have to be people person to do that. But I have I have a team. I call them Connect Team.
Yeah, that's
right. And their role is to try and have a intentional conversation, to take the initiative, have an intentional conversation with someone who's new, inviting them to take a step into church.
Yeah.
Mm. And the average congregational member, I go, it probably is too big an ask for them to go, there's someone you don't know, you take the initiative and go and walk to talk to them and invite them to take a step into church. Most people will go, it's just too hard. That's fair enough. It is. I know it's hard. I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
But you can ask the congregation to say, no, you're the welcome team. Your job is to love people. They go, yeah, my job is to love people. Mm. That's what I'm supposed to do as one of God's people.
Yeah.
Okay. We've finished week one. What's the journey people go on after week one all the way through to community group, home group, Bible study group?
So for me, follow-up team, they're the ones getting to know the person, finding out where they're at spiritually, having those sorts of conversations with them. And so they'll do the, oh, look, you have big questions about Jesus, how about you go along to our evangelistic course, which we call Life. And I trust my follow-up team with that responsibility, that they will, they'll do that, and they'll take them along. They actually go with them along to the Life course and sit with them and introduce them to people and help them engage with the big questions about Jesus.
How many of them do you have a year?
20% of our visitors this year have handed cards in.
How many times do you run the course in a year?
Life course or our leadership course? Life course is, it's four times a year. It's once a term. And then flowing
out.
Goes for five weeks. And then flowing out of that, they have a sort of follow-up.
What do you do if somebody's just, they've arrived on the last week of one course, the next one doesn't start for 10 weeks' time, do you know?
The Life team have a, they run a small group coming out of that. So they would just invite them to come to that.
So the Life course evolves into a small group?
Unofficially.
As you know, they're a group of people who meet.
Yeah.
But it has a, in some ways it has a use-by date. But it's not signing up, I'm going to be coming to this every week rest of the year.
But the same leaders of the Life course become the small group leaders, or it's a different group of different leaders?
They have two leaders. They have assigned leaders for the follow-up course who aren't involved in running the Life course. They're separate but part of the team, as I understand it. I'm starting to get out of my comfort zone.
What about you, Andy, from week two through to...
So week two, someone gets an SMS and an email inviting them to our members course. And then if they come back a third time, they'll get a phone call from someone as well following that up. We've got a team of volunteers that do a lot of that follow-up and inviting to our newcomers course, which we run five or six, seven times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so from there, they then join Salt and join a small group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you do with the person who thinks they're Christian, but you're pretty sure they're not? Do you say, come along to our Jesus course, our Life course, do you introduce in God, whatever, or do you kind of let them track into your small group? I'm talking about the person who'd be insulted at the idea that I'm not Christian.
Yeah. So we've been quite deliberate in the first couple of weeks of our membership course that it's, preach Jesus really clearly and the death of Jesus really clearly, so that we're trying to evangelize
everyone there.
And then part of what a membership course does is it gives you time to have the conversations with people, to go, what are you thinking about church? What are the issues you have coming from whatever church you've come from? There might not be, but there might be issues. What are the questions you have? And be in the course of that going, something that would really helpful for you would be our Life course to answer some of those big questions. And yes, I know, we have new Christians go to that. We have people who very clearly aren't Christian, don't identify as Christian. And so how about you go along to that? So I've had those conversations, and we want to have them. But, I mean, I mean, you know, people are people, aren't they? They can still say, you know, they still say that they're Christian, identified, know the words to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you might go, I don't think you are, but you just keep.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep trying to, okay, I need to remember this person, I need to keep having these conversations with them and follow them through on that.
Question from Claire Williams.
Yep.
Do you structure, coordinate people inviting each other into their homes beyond growth groups? I mean, have you found ways to do this that aren't totally awkward or weird? So I guess you're thinking about, you said before, Dave, you want people to invite people out for dinner and homes. I mean, obviously you're pushing for a culture of that, but do you allocate people as buddies to do that?
We haven't got to that stage yet. I'm thinking that that's on the radar. So you could invite people to do it, and some people will do it and some people won't, but I just, again, it's that thing of, I don't want people to fall through the cracks, you know, and the bigger we get and the more people we have coming along, you've just got to be more thoughtful about ensuring everyone gets an invite. Now, even in congregation, there's a standing, a bunch of them go out for dinner afterwards, because it finishes in time for that, and so my Connect team, part of what they'll do is they're meeting, talking to people, is invite them to go to that dinner. And some do and some don't. That's the way of that.
We try and do a bit of strategic social pairing up, I guess, in some ways, and get someone, can you ask these people to come to your house for dinner?
Yeah.
Do a little bit of that.
Cool. You talked about the book Secrets of the Church Shopper.
Yep,
great. Other resources, other books around that are on this topic, kind of topic? Dave?
The book Fusion by, was it Searcy?
Nelson Searcy, yeah. It's kind of, it's really good and then a bit irritating.
Yeah, it's irritating in a really American way.
Yeah.
I think he puts, you get that feeling as you read it that he thinks his pathway, his process, that's what will make people Christian. And I'm going, it's the gospel that makes people who does it. But he's really, he talks about giving people gifts when they come after their first time and second time.
A bit kind of full on, kind of over the top for me.
Yeah.
You've got to translate a lot of that too, the Australian culture, I think. A lot of those books.
But it's really helpful in terms of reading a guy who thought about how to love people beyond the Sunday.
And be organised in doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even though I don't agree with him at point or follow him, because it's wisdom, and you can translate it, you go, the reason it's really helpful is you go, this is a guy who's thought about it.
Yeah.
I need to think about it.
Mm.
And that's my responsibility, is to think this through really carefully about what will be helpful for people in terms of loving them beyond the Sunday.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Dave, Andy, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My guest has been Andy Hobbs from Salt Church in Wollongong, and also Dave Allen from the Hunter Bible Church in Newcastle. And you've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll be back tomorrow, actually, with a special edition thinking about the whole issue of religious freedom. And Michael Callahan will be our guest, the Executive Director of Freedom for Faith. Thanks for joining us this week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.